Jordan Dance!
Bring him up, gang. Bring him up.
Here we go. History in the making.
Green, green, green.
Kyle Larson gives them an old-fashioned whooping at Bristol. Now the Trucks and Xfinity Series head for an old-fashioned weekend at Rockingham. This is Brent McMillan, and you're listening to the Pit Reporters. With me this week, Adam Alexander from the CW and Doug Turnbull from PRN.
Welcome to the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network. And now, here's your host, Brent McMillan.
Welcome to the show. Glad to have Adam and Doug here. And Adam, it wasn't as bad as when, like, Waltrip used to win at Bristol by, like, five laps. But it was pretty much a whipping by Kyle Larson last weekend.
Let me say this. Thank goodness for stage racing and cautions to break it up.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, and I don't know if you heard some of the media that Larson did this week, but Harvick asked him on his podcast about running Xfinity. And
yeah,
he basically said, I don't want to sound cocky, but I want to take him behind the woodshed, which is exactly what he did. And then he went on to say, you know, it was a little bit more difficult in the truck race to race around those guys because they don't give you as much room and a little few more question marks on what kind of moves they're going to make. Less question marks on Saturday. So I think if we hadn't had stages, I would have lapped the field. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I have to agree, he was pretty incredible minus the cautions.
You know, it's funny, Doug, because a lot of times you hear race fans go, racing was a lot better back in the old days, back way back when. And I'm thinking, yeah, back when guys used to win by two and three laps. Well,
yeah,
now people are complaining about Kyle Larson going out there and blowing them out.
Yeah, no kidding. This really, the last 2 weeks have felt like a throwback type of weekend with William Byron leading almost all of Darlington. And then, of course, Kyle Larson doing what he did at Bristol. And a lot of people loved the Bristol race a year ago in the spring because of all the tire wear. I went back and watched the highlights getting ready for being on pit road this weekend. And my goodness, there were only five or six cars left on the lead lap, Brett, and there was a long green flag run. I think you were at that race. That felt in a whole different kind of throwback way. It's just the long green flag run of the low number of cars. But, yeah, certainly a different dynamic this weekend there. And Kyle Larson took everybody to the woodshed this weekend for sure.
You know, we've seen Kyle Larson do this before. It's not unusual. And yet at the same time, think about what happened to him at Darlington. You know, you talk about total contrast, Adam.
Well, here's the other thing I would say about that, though. And this is what makes the sport great and keeps the drama involved. If you rewind to the last time that Larson did the triple, you go to Miami. And he wins the truck race and probably didn't deserve to. You know, Corey Heim has the problems with his truck shutting off. He had been the truck to beat, and Larson ends up coming back from a spin. But he wins on Friday night. You go to Saturday, he's got a 12-second advantage, and he's doing the same thing in Xfinity at Miami that he did Saturday at Bristol. But we get a late caution. He gets bottled up on a restart, and he doesn't win the race. And so, you know, you're always a caution away from being compromised. And I go back to what Doug talked about at Darlington. William Byron is laying it on him, but one slight miscue, you maybe wait one lap too long to come down pit road, you lose the advantage, you lose the track position. And we have seen so many times in this era of NASCAR, and you hear everyone talk about controlling the race. Once you lose control, lane selection on a restart, the lead coming down pit road, that can compromise you and take a dominant day and turn it into a loss, and we've seen it on multiple occasions.
And Doug, we've seen this a lot with Larson, where it's kind of been a, you know, checkers or wreckers for him, you know, where he has a great day or he has a DNF, and that's kind of been the conundrum with him, hasn't it?
Well, for sure, and I want to say that he is still fourth in points despite that terrible finish in Darlington. The stage points with him and also with like Bubba Wallace and Joey Logano have really redeemed for bad finishes. And I think that's one thing that's unique, very new school, I guess, of all the old school things we're mentioning here, is that if you have a good stage one, stage two, and go checkers or wreckers in the last stage, well, then you have a way to make up for it. Of course, at Darlington, he crashed out on lap four and then didn't come back and gain any points even after that. So that takes that away. But it does give buffers to these drivers if they do make some mistakes because they can really rack up a lot of points. It is strange, though, with Kyle Larson that it wouldn't be more consistent because he was like this all of last year. And really, banging that car against the wall even goes back to his Ganassi days. That's just what you get when you have a driver that's almost always putting it over the edge.
But this is two races in a row now, Adam. We've seen him do this at Bristol because he did it last fall at Bristol, led more than 400 laps, you know, and then wins the race. The thing that's weird at Bristol now is you think back to last spring when the whole tire fall off was unbelievable. Hamlin wins basically because he outmanaged his tires over anybody else. Nobody could explain why it happened. Came back with the same tire compound in the fall, this spring, and nobody's been able to duplicate it. And it's just, you had more tire fall off on Saturday than you did on Sunday.
Well, and I think what the direct relation is the air temperature and the track temperature. And if that track temperature is not elevated to a certain level, this tire gets compromised, you have a high level of wear, and that creates what we saw in the springtime last year with Denny Hamlin. And I think it's also why we saw what we saw Saturday in practice versus what we saw in the race on Sunday. Sunday was a nicer day, temperature was up, sun was out, it heated up that track, and therefore you didn't have the wear issues. And so the question becomes, and I would defend Goodyear. I think they work so hard at testing. And as we all know, testing is not the end-all be-all because, one, you can't duplicate the weather because typically you're doing that at a time of year when it's not conducive to when you're going to be racing. And you certainly can't duplicate what it's going to be like to have 35, 40 cars on track at one time. So I think they've got a difficult job. But they also are taxed with having fall off to help make these races competitive, and it's a delicate balance. So I think they've got a very, very difficult job, and what we saw over the weekend to me is just a direct result of Mother Nature and how cool it was on Saturday versus Sunday, and I would say the same was true when you look at the two races there and the difference we saw in 2024.
Well, Doug, people accuse NASCAR of controlling a lot, so why not the weather?
No kidding. Yeah, put a big dome over Bristol. What's interesting is the air temperature from spring race to spring race, 24 to 25 for the Cup race, was not all that different, but the big difference was cloud cover and the track temperature. And Wendy Venturini on pit road pointed out that the track temperature, I think, was in somewhere in the 80s or close to 100. It was actually really warm, and that helped activate the PJ1. They also, spring race to spring race, used resin back in the spring a year ago, switched it to PJ1 back in the September race, and kept PJ1 as that track stick on the bottom of the track over there. So when I got to the track and got to walk down turn three into the infield on Sunday morning, I saw Greg Irwin from Toyota, who works in their competition side now. He was out there running his shoes over it and telling me how sticky it was compared to how it was on Saturday. But at that time, before we ran a lap on Sunday, he told me there are two schools of thought here. 50% of the garage seems to think that the PJ1 is going to create so much grip that it actually runs the right side tires out. The other side thought that it would actually take pressure off the right side tires because those right side tires were the ones that were recording on Saturday. As it turned out, the right side tires and all tires pretty much held up. The only cords I saw on my side of pit road were for Jesse Love in the 33 car making his Cup debut. And he went from 19th, where he started, to about 33rd by the end of stage one, because he tried to jump up in that outside lane and wear him out. Goodyear's in a small box. There's the car to look at. There's the track. There's the track treatment. And good thing it's not my job to try to figure it out, Brett and Adam.
Absolutely. And nor is it my job to try to figure it out. But you're right. I mean, that's the challenge Goodyear has is, hey, they're not in the sport because they're, gregarious citizens. They're here to sell tires, no doubt about it. And the last thing a tire company wants is a reputation of putting out their tires that don't last.
But I would say...
But that's the challenge. But you're right. But the drivers and the teams and NASCAR want tires that wear out because it produces better racing.
But that's why we saw the option tire utilized in a race at Phoenix. I mean, it certainly impacted competition, and there was a strategy to that, and we saw the give and take of that in that race. But it also is an opportunity for Goodyear to say, these are real racing conditions when we can figure out what we have. And so it's a two-way street. It's a learning experience for Goodyear, but it also changes the way you look at the competition if you're NASCAR. I personally don't like the option tire. I like one tire in the race because I think it brings too much to chance, but I certainly understand why Goodyear does it in that scenario. If you are going to go out, find the sweet spot on tires so the racing is better when we go back there for the championship in November, I am all for it. But it speaks to the challenges Goodyear has when it comes to finding the right tire and how difficult that is to do in a test versus in an actual race.
When we come back, I want to talk about the fact that we've had some really good racing in the early part of the year. But then the last 3 weeks, you guys both talked about it. We've had three weeks of dominant cars. How do we explain it? We'll ask them. Stay with us.
Hey, this is Michael Walter for Echo Park Automotive, and I'm here to tell you why you should shop Echo Park before you buy a car, truck, or SUV. Over half the inventory at Echo Park is priced below $25,000, and car for car, truck for truck, Echo Park Automotive's pricing is $3,000 less than the competition. Maybe that's why Echo Park has over 100,000 five-star reviews. Echo Park Automotive is built to make sure everyone drives away happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
When it comes to maintaining your engine to run at peak performance, trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant. Z-Max soaks into metal, so it's easy to add to your oil or gas to disperse carbon buildup in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. Protect your vehicle's engine to the max with Z-Max. Check us out at zmax.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter to find out more about our full line of products. Remember the name, Z-Max, for your car, big rig, small engines, firearms, and more. That's Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
Mark Garrow is your host for Garage Pass, here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
If you have a chance to make a difference in a kid's life, you need to take full advantage of that opportunity.
For those kids to know somebody has their back, somebody is caring about them, thinking about them when they feel like nobody is.
Anything that I can do now to support Speedway Children's Charities, I do because I've seen the work firsthand.
We owe it to children, no matter where they come from.
Unfortunately, there is no end to some of the terrible atrocities in our world. Speedway Children's Charities can feel really good that we are getting the most good out of every dollar that's given. At Speedway Children's Charities,
our mission
is simple.
Help every child we can.
Because all children
deserve joy
and hope
and love.
And if one child is still in need,
then there's still work to do.
Because their future is our future.
And there's still so much they can teach us.
Find out more at SpeedwayCharities.org. Brett McMillan returns with more of the Pit Reporters here on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back along with Doug Turnbull from PRN. And what's your podcast, Five to Go?
That's correct. Yeah, the Five to Go podcast right here that you can find on goprn.com.
All right, there you go. And Adam Alexander from the CW is here as well. I got teed it up before the break. You know, we've had a lot of great competition in the early part of this year. And then we go to these three old traditional tracks, Martinsville, Darlington, Bristol. You're thinking, man, this is just going to keep rolling along. And then we end up with Hamlin dominates Martinsville. Byron dominates but doesn't win Darlington. And then Larson dominates Bristol. What happened, Doug?
Yeah, let me tell you, I'm going to solve the whole NASCAR season right here. For one, you have several races under your belt. All right, so just whatever little idiosyncrasies that may have arisen during the offseason, you had more time to figure out. I think, too, the big teams have just hit their groove because before this, even though we had exciting finishes at Atlanta and Phoenix, so to speak, and especially at Circuit of the Americas, they were all run by Christopher Bell. You know, the Daytona 500 is its own beast. It's super speedway. It's a drafting track. You have no idea until basically the last millisecond of the last lap sometimes who's going to win those. And then you just kind of get into this part of the schedule that, as you said, Brett, it's weird because Homestead, too, before this, but Martinsville, Darlington, Bristol, all races that just put our hair on end. These are going to be great. But lately, the Gen 7 car just hasn't run as well, especially on the shorter tracks like Bristol and Martinsville. So it's a really tough equation to solve. The one that confused me the most was Darlington, just because the Southern 500 was such a banger won by Chase Briscoe back last year.
Adam, what do you see?
Well, the one thing I would say here is you got to give a nod anytime there's a dominating performance and something that maybe would create the thought process in the fan base that it was not a good event. You have to give a nod to those that are doing the dominating, whether it's Denny Hamlin at Martinsville, William Byron at Darlington, or certainly on Sunday what Kyle Larson was able to pull off at Bristol. So I credit those race teams with their performance, their preparation, and their ability to go out and execute and dominate the races the way they did. The other common thread here, though, I mean, Doug referenced what Christopher Bell did, winning three in a row, even though, you wouldn't chronicle those as dominant victories because some of those came down to the wire. Winning three in a row is pretty dominant, right? And then you look individually at what some of these teams are doing and the dominance with which they've executed. I would say that the common theme here is Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports. And yeah. I'm not going to jump out on a limb and say we're only going to have six or seven winners this year, but I think the win list will be shorter than longer because of the stranglehold they have right now on the sport. And you look at the tracks that are coming up. You know, take Talladega, put it aside. But the next couple of races after that, mile and a half intermediates, that is where these organizations have really been outstanding when you look at their win record in the next gen car. We got some road courses coming. Some question marks there that would open the door for a guy like AJ Allmendinger, Shane Van Gisbergen. But right now, when you go to the style of track that you anticipate is going to be conventional, I would say you have to look at the success across the board that Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing are putting up every week, really.
How much do you think that the unusual schedule plays into this, Doug? The fact that you start the year with two super speedways and then a road course, how much does that play into it?
Well, for sure. And then what was there was Vegas, which had Josh Berry break Christopher Bell's winning streak, but also remember the option tire that Adam mentioned in the first segment that was run at Phoenix. That was a little bit of a game changer as well, though Christopher Bell seemed to have people's number at Phoenix. I think you had all those different things. Then you get to this line of races where I guess let's finally chalk one up to the racing purists, huh? Because the racing purists, you hear from them when you have a race with a overtime or debris this or, you know, a bunch of crashing. Well, the racing purists have gotten about three or four in a row here, especially these last three that have seen just good old-fashioned butt whooping. So I guess that we're just settling back into normal. I'm interested to see, as Adam mentioned, not so much Talladega coming up, but after you get a week-long break to work on your stuff, and then a super speedway when you get back to some intermediates, Kansas and whatnot, and then eventually the Coke 600, what these teams have to offer.
Well, Adam, you made a great point. And, you know, we've all covered other sports as well. There are blowouts. Every sport has blowouts. I mean, the Cubs beat the Dodgers the other day, 16-0. I mean, it happens. And it's not an unusual thing. And why shouldn't it be the same thing in NASCAR?
And I would say this, too. Two of the three races that we talked about, number one, Darlington. Let's just take all three of these tracks and break it down. Number one, Martinsville. Denny Hamlin dominates the race. However, we know the role that lap traffic plays at Martinsville and the difficulty to execute there, regardless of how good your race car is or the advantage from first to second, you still have a lot to overcome to be able to dominate and win at a place like Martinsville. Exactly what Kyle Larson faced Sunday at Bristol. Same deal. You've got to maneuver that lap traffic. The other nod I would give Kyle Larson and everyone at Bristol is you run the final stage caution free. I mean, 250 laps without an opportunity to regather your thoughts is remarkable. And then the one in the middle, I mean, William Byron's dominating that race, but we know how quickly things can jump up and grab you at Darlington. So it just stands out to me, the ability to perform under pressure and do it at such challenging places where there's really trouble at every corner.
Well, each week on the Pit Reporters, we give you a chance to go to goprn.com and vote in our poll. And this week's question is, who has had the most impressive performance in recent weeks? And your choices are Denny Hamlin at Martinsville, William Byron at Darlington, or Kyle Larson at Bristol. Last week we asked you, how often should we have a throwback weekend? Well, the fans have spoken. As Kyle Busch said at Darlington in answer to Chase Elliott, who said it's run its course, Kyle Busch said, hey, the fans want it. 72% said we should have it yearly.
Wow.
10% said every 5 years. 10% said weekly.
Hey, there you go.
There you go.
We had that with all the domination.
Yeah. And 7% said every other year. But overwhelmingly, the fans like it yearly. When we come back, Kyle Larson says, you know what? The Cup drivers should be running more often in the Xfinity Series. Adam sees all those races. See what he thinks when we come back.
For anyone who's worried about back taxes, has not filed tax returns, and doesn't know what to do next, stop and listen. Not filing your taxes can have severe consequences, especially in this political climate. Now that COVID is over, the IRS is getting aggressive, massively increasing enforcement and collection efforts. With politicians making all sorts of promises, especially when it comes to taxes, hiding and not dealing with your taxes will cause you harsh legal and financial ramifications. But right now, the IRS offers forgiveness and writes off a massive amount of tax debt. The Tax Doctor offers a free service that helps people get out of IRS collections and back in good standing with the government. Don't hide or bury your head in the sand. Take advantage of our free service. Call now to learn more. 800-393-5045. 800-393-5045. 800-393-5045. That's 800-393-5045.
Lenny Baticki brings you PRN at the Track every week here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
I'm PRN's Doug Turnbull, co-host of the 5 to Go podcast, a weekly deep dive into five motorsports issues. Devin Kupka gives the Gen Z view.
One thing that I've never seen before, when the cars got four wide, everybody stood up cheering.
And championship-winning mechanic Dan Elliott leans on his decades in the garage and promoting.
Unless everybody is aware of the rules, then no, it's not fair for everyone.
Listen to the 5 to Go podcast on GoPRN.com and subscribe on Apple and Spotify.
Denny Hamlin slides up. He gets into the fence a little bit off of turn three. We will see if he is able to sustain that.
So suddenly things change dramatically. The two youngsters for JGR, now the veterans that are occupying the top two spots in turn three.
Hamlin out front for the 11th time today.
Denny Hamlin gives up the lead.
Side by side going into one. Truex down low, Hamlin up high.
Three wide in front of him. On the bottom is Chastain. Up top is Austin Dillon with Gilliland in the middle.
It's Bristol, baby.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Sweepstakes fans, start your entries. Visit echopark.com/speedway to enter for a chance to win a Toyota Tundra plus a brand new Thor camper. Visit echopark.com/speedway now, and you can drive off a winner. And we welcome you back along with Adam Alexander from the CW and also Doug Turnbull from PRN and 5 to Go podcast. I'm Brett McMillan. Glad to have you with us. Kyle Larson this week. Adam says that he thinks NASCAR needs to lift the restrictions that they have. I think, what is it, five races Cup drivers are allowed to run over the course of a season in the Xfinity Series. Five races for each Cup driver.
Right.
He thinks they need to lift the restrictions and let them run more often. Now, if you and I were talking during the break, what was it, 4 years ago, the fans were all saying, the Cup drivers are down there in the Xfinity Series stealing these guys' money. Well, why are they doing that?
I'll go back. I believe, and I might not get my dates right on this, but I believe it was in 2016. I think this happened in the same year, within weeks of each other. I could be wrong, but they were close. Joey Logano led every lap at Bristol, all 301, Cup regular running in Xfinity. And Kyle Busch led every lap but one in an event at Las Vegas, led 199 of 200. I think it was Bubba Wallace that led through a cycle of green flag pit stops. So there were two Cup drivers that dropped down, ran on Saturday, and just obliterated the field. And the one thing I would say, while we've not expanded the number of races each individual driver can run in Xfinity or trucks, NASCAR this year is allowing drivers to run the Dash for Cash races. There are no limits on them running. Like Mexico City was a race that I thought we would have no Cup influence because you don't want those drivers running on Sunday to get extra time on Saturday. Nope, they're allowed to run Mexico City, Chicago.
And Daniel Suarez campaigned to not have the Cup drivers in the race.
Yep, and I believe, really? I could be wrong, I think Daniel is running that.
And now
race.
He is, yeah. But he,
And then, you know, Chicago's another one, and Cup drivers can run that. So the opportunities have been expanded a little bit, and I just wonder, and you and I were talking during the break, if Kyle Busch had done what Kyle Larson did on Saturday, fans might have a different feel on allowing Cup drivers to race on Saturday. That's just an opinion.
Yeah, if Kyle Busch had said what Kyle Larson said, they would have a different opinion.
That is 100% true, by the way, because I thought about it, and I actually liked what Kyle Larson said, but I thought if it was Denny Hamlin or Kyle Busch, there's no way they would get away with that. And the reason he said it, though, that he wants to embarrass that series, number one, is to bring up the acumen of those drivers and show them this is how races run so they feel better prepared when they come to Cup. And number two, it's kind of out of the way I interpret it anyway, is out of protest for not being able to run more of those races. So Kyle Larson gave him the old heave-ho there and showed him how it's done.
You know, I don't mind the limits because I think we've had a chance to see the identity of the Xfinity series come through, a separate identity. It isn't Cup drivers winning week in and week out. And, you know, the whole sales part of names are made here. We've had a chance to see some of these guys shine through. And, you know, and now we're starting to see some of them move into the Cup series. And they've established an identity before they've gotten there.
You've got to build your brand. You've got to create stars for the future. And to me, the way you do that is having success on track and winning. Winning trumps everything. And while running second, you know, Carson Quapel did a great job on Saturday. He ends up second. He gets by Justin Allgaier. He finishes second to Larson. But if Larson's not in the field and Carson Quapel gets his first career win in that fashion, a star is born. And unfortunately, he's just a second-place guy because the highlight was Kyle Larson. I'm not against Cup guys running at all. I think it's important. I think it's wonderful for the series, and it brings some credibility on Saturday. It maybe puts fans in the seats more so than they would have been, helps TV, radio, everyone involved. But I like the limits so that on most Saturdays, you give an opportunity to the series regulars to go out and be the superstars we need them to be to build the future of the sport.
See, now, I don't know that I necessarily agree with you about putting fans in the seats or helping the TV ratings. And I don't know that I've seen any discernible difference. I think if people were going to the race Saturday, they were going to the race Saturday. And I don't know that having Kyle Larson in the field actually added anybody else in the seats.
Well, that's the thing, too. I just wanted to point out, because when Kyle Busch was winning 10 Xfinity races a year, there were people complaining about it and not wanting to watch because they knew he was going to win. But when it's a different variety of Cup drivers with this balance between zero and run as much as you want, with having five races and also keeping them out of the playoffs, it allows like that Hendrick car, that number 17, to have a rotation where Alex Bowman, William Byron, Chase Elliott, and Larson all get a bite of the apple. So you get a variety of Cup drivers that show up, and they'll go down and show up at these unicorn races like the one in Mexico City, and that, and having just a little dash of flavor instead of too much maybe adds a little more intrigue.
Well, the thing is, we're seeing fewer and fewer standalone races too, right, as far as the Xfinity series especially goes. I mean, yeah, you're going to have one this week, but how many standalone races the Xfinity series have this year?
I knew you were going to ask me that. Off the top of my head, you have Rockingham. You have Portland, which this year will be Labor Day weekend. Xfinity does not go to Darlington in the fall on Labor Day weekend. And those are the only ones off the top of my head that I can come up with. Xfinity is off Michigan weekend, so that'll be a Truck Cup weekend. And other than that, I believe every Xfinity race is partnered with a Cup weekend.
Yeah. So, I mean, the opportunities are there for the Cup Series guys to do it, but I think – I know you talked about that they're letting them run in the Dash for Cash races, but they're still not going to let the Cup guys run in the playoffs.
Right. And they can't collect money, right? They're not eligible for the cash, but they can show up and participate like what we saw Kyle do over the weekend. The other thing I would point out, anytime that Larson does what he did on Saturday, you start to develop this thought of those guys shouldn't be allowed to run. I'll remind you know, Larson ran, as I said earlier, in Miami. Even though he dominated, he didn't win. Bowman drove the 17 car. Byron drove the 17 car. Chase Elliott drove the 17 car on Saturday. They all finished second, but none of them were able to get to the finish line first. So it is not like we've got this real big issue of Cup drivers coming down and just stealing. It happened Saturday, but it's not been happening across the board this year.
Well, and the thing is, you still have, Doug, you still have Hendrick. If Hendrick feels a few cars, but, you know, Gibbs is still putting cars out there. But, hey, JRM's the one putting a ton of cars out there, you know, and beyond that, a lot of the, you know, RCR's putting cars out there, and they are very good cars. But you don't have the plethora of Cup teams putting cars out there like you used to when Roush Fenway used to have six cars out there.
Oh, God. It's hard to believe that ever since that disastrous 2018 season with the 60 car that shared Ty Majeski, Austin Cindric, and Chase Briscoe where it DNF'd all those races, Roush Fenway's been out of the Xfinity Series. Penske has shut the Xfinity program down. Really, Ford doesn't have the potential, so to speak, that Chevy and Toyota do to develop drivers simply because none of the Ford Cup teams are actually putting teams in the Xfinity Series there. So that's a little bit problematic. There's really just the Haas factory team and RSS Racing that are the ones that are doing that. So that is an interesting change because the argument was made for a long time. We've got to have Cup drivers go down in the lower series, especially Xfinity, to maintain the sponsorship programs, to leave just a few seats open for the young drivers to run. Now it seems like it's a lot of drivers that are paying to be in those seats, particularly on the Gibbs side for sure, and some on the JRM side and some of the other series, some of the other teams in that series too.
And that's always an interesting challenge when you know, the guys who are paying for seats, do they earn them? Do they deserve them? You know, that performance tells a story.
It does. But I also think that, you know, you look at this rookie class and it's so diverse in where they come from and where they raced full time and how they made their way to the Xfinity Series. But they have shown all of them, I mean, across the board. And if you went into the year, you probably could have taken a couple and said they're going to be up here and taken a couple of others and said they're probably going to struggle to find their way. And I would say each and every one of them have had things to celebrate this year. And, you know, there's a lot of times you look up in an Xfinity race and four or five of the top 10 are those rookie of the year contenders. And it's not the same guys every week. Obviously, you know, Zilich has won a race and he's someone that has established himself. Quapel is starting to really get it going, but everyone else has had their moment. And you know, while the struggles have been there at times, this rookie class speaks to the talent of the young racers, regardless of how they found their way to the Xfinity Series.
Well, it's going to be.
It says something about that talent, by the way, that William Sawalich is the fourth or fifth best rookie out of that one. He flat dominated through ARCA and all these other places. I actually expected more out of him, Adam, so I'm looking forward to see as he gets more reps second half of the year what that 18 car does.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this week when they go to Darlington. No, not Darlington, but Rockingham. I'm not sure a lot of these guys were even born the last time NASCAR ran at Rockingham. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Six of them, I think.
Six of them.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that when we come back.
This is Kyle Petty for Echo Park Automotive, and I'm here to tell you why you should shop Echo Park before you buy a car, truck, or SUV. Over half of inventory at Echo Park is priced below $25,000. And car for car, truck for truck, Echo Park Automotive's pricing is $3,000 less than the competition. Maybe that's why Echo Park has over 95,000 five-star reviews. Echo Park Automotive is built to make sure you drive away happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
Drivers, start your engines!
Atlanta Motor Speedway is built for battles. High speeds, tight packs, dramatic finishes.
Crossover move! They're three wide for the lead!
But you've never seen Atlanta Motor Speedway like this, under the lights, where every moment feels bigger. Experience the Quaker State 400, available at Walmart, Saturday, June 28th, under the lights in Atlanta. Get your tickets now at AtlantaMotorSpeedway.com.
Doug Rice is your host for Fast Talk every week on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Time to pull down on the handle and start rolling them here at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
The green flag flies at the Atlanta Motor Speedway.
We're about to contest the Coca-Cola 600.
We're racing at Texas Motor Speedway.
Now Keselowski goes way up the racetrack.
Here comes Harrison Burton. He rockets to the lead.
Trouble. Car goes around. It's Chris Buescher.
Joey Logano battles to the outside. They come back to the start-finish line.
Bubba Wallace looks inside. And now here's Byron. Takes a quick left to block him. They head back to one.
Here goes Ross Chastain. He's going to the bottom of the racetrack.
Bubba goes up. Blaney hits the outside wall off of turn two.
Can Christopher Bell do anything with him? He gets down to the bottom of the racetrack.
Briscoe dives to the bottom of the racetrack. Side by side. They get loose. They spin. Now Tyler Reddick does the 360. So does Briscoe.
Heading into turn number seven as he wraps it around. The crowd is cheering for Daniel Suarez here on this final lap.
Allmendinger gets into Alex Bowman. Ross Chastain back out to the front for the final time.
This is PRN.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back, along with Doug Turnbull from PRN and Adam Alexander from the CW. Brett McMillan, glad to have you with us. Doug, ever been to Rockingham before?
No, I wish I'd had. I just got to Bristol for the first time this past weekend, which is hard to believe. But Rockingham is certainly on the list, and hope we get to one of these days. That'd be fun.
Adam and I were just talking. Both of us were at the last time they ran a race at Rockingham, which tells you how old we are.
2004?
Was it 2004?
Yeah, 2004, last time they ran there, yes.
Yeah. So, and Adam says six guys running this weekend were not even born the last time NASCAR ran a race at Rockingham.
That's an unofficial stat, by the way.
It's a throw. I mean, it's a throwback, and it's interesting because it was reopened, in my way of thinking. It didn't have the juice that North Wilkesboro did, and a lot of that was because Dale Earnhardt Jr. was behind it. But it's reopening. The grandstands are sold out, so it'll look good on TV, and I think a lot of people are excited about this, Doug.
Well, I think it's a big deal, and I'm certainly going to find a way to watch. I'll be traveling with my wife, Momo, on our anniversary vacation there, but I'll find a way to get the TV or the phone screen or something on for that. I will say, when they did make that brief return for those two truck races, 2013, 14-ish, around there, I know Kyle Larson, I think, won the first one of those, if my memory serves correctly. It didn't seem to have a ton of buzz, and then it fizzled out quickly. I'm hoping that not only with the Xfinity Series going there, and their higher horsepower, it's going to buzz the tires a little more, although it's been repaved. The fact that Casey Kane is in the race in an RCR car, to me, drives enough excitement right there, because we haven't seen him in a NASCAR race car since 2018.
What's the big excitement? What's the buzz in the garage for this one, Adam?
It's interesting because I go back to what we said coming back, and we laughed about it, but with only six drivers in the field that were even born the last time we raced there, I'm not sure that many of these drivers in the field can measure the magnitude of what it means to go back here and race. And probably will start to feel that as they interact with the fans. They did a test there in January, but I don't know that that truly introduces you to what this place embodies. You do a race weekend there, a standalone weekend where Xfinity is top shelf, which is always special for those guys. To me, that's when you will start to feel the energy and excitement and understand what Rockingham is all about. There's a lot of crew members, though, crew chiefs that were around, maybe playing a different role in the early 2000s when we went there, Xfinity Cup, that really appreciate this and no doubt have got this one circled as one they'd like to win in the return.
Well, it was always a very racy place. You know, they'll be able to pass, and I would think, and you know, it's fun. We don't have to do it's not the 24 hours of Rockingham we used to have when we used to run 500 miles there. Oh, my gosh. That was a nightmare. But those were long days. But yeah, that's not going to be the case this weekend. But with the trucks and Xfinity, I'm curious to see how, like I said, the Xfinity race is sold out. So, like I said, it'll look good on TV. But it's always been a racy track, Doug.
Well, right, and I remember I really started following this sport closely in 2001. It was the first race back after Dale Earnhardt died. Steve Park and the DEI car went to Victory Lane. That was a big deal, and also it was a race too. Casey Kane, you talk about him running. He almost won his first race, a photo finish with Matt Kenseth there in Kane's rookie season in 2004. So it has the potential to create some big moments. The one big difference is, and Adam and Brett, y'all can more attest to this, but the track has been repaved. That used to be a track that, from my reading about it and watching old races, just used to chew up tires and spit them out. And it really took a wily veteran to figure it out. I wonder how much of the veteran presence of Kane, so to speak, or some of the established drivers like Justin Allgaier will be able to pay or be able to pay forward when it's so many young drivers there, but it is a repaved track.
There was a joke circulating when they did the test there that Casey Kane had committed to come back and do this race before he realized they had repaved it. So maybe he wasn't going to garner the advantage he thought he was going to have when he went back to take care of those tires. But it's funny, you forget things. And I was actually watching just today the 2004 Xfinity race there. And a big storyline pre-race from Larry Mack, right, is in the Fox booth, is these teams have only got three sets of tires. You know, you got to manage them, you know, and how do you use them? Because they're going to wear out and so on. And so where does that storyline fall? Because they've repaved it now, and I'm sure tire wear will not be near as significant as what it was when we left there in 2004. The other thing I would bring up about Kasey Kahne, he actually made his Xfinity debut at Rockingham in 2002, I believe. And if I remember this right, I think Kasey Kahne and Casey Mears both made their Xfinity debut, same race at Rockingham in 2002. So it'll be neat to have Kasey Kahne there because, as Doug said, we haven't seen him in a while. He had the photo finish like 10/1000ths of a second when he almost beat Matt Kenseth in a cup race. He won one of those truck races when we returned there 12, 15 years ago. And
that's right,
So anyway, it'll be fun to have Kasey back.
Well, it's going to be fun to see how it plays out. There'll be a lot of excitement, as you talked about, the Xfinity guys being the main show. And the truck series has been a little interesting this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So. Hey, I do want to confirm what Adam said, not about Kasey Mears, but about Kahne. He ran 20 races in 2002 in what was then called the Busch Series, and he finished 31st in his Rockingham debut. So a hard knock there driving for the Robert Yates Xfinity Series Ford.
Yates, that's right. It was the 98, right? It was
you nailed it.
Yep, I remember that.
Channel lock. Yeah.
There you go, the channel lock car. That's it.
Yeah. It's a white car with blue lettering on it.
Yeah, blue and kind of orange maybe. Yeah. I remember that, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. And I can't tell what I had for lunch yesterday, but I can see that.
You know, we need an old person's spot. I know you're going to a break. We need an old person, because we're all showing our age here.
Yeah, exactly
what we're doing,
right.
Yeah. I won't include you in that, Doug.
Gosh. I'm working on it. Hey, I remember the 2004 stuff, okay? So.
but I can't tell you what I had for lunch yesterday.
That's right. Or today.
Nope, can't do that either. All right, when we come back, it's a break for the Cup Series. Who really needed it? Stay with us.
Attention men, here's a great way to have more fun in bed and save money. If you want to take something like Viagra, they can give you a way to pay as little as $2 a pill. Yes, $2 a pill. Compare that to prices as high as $60 per tablet. These pills work for men to improve their performance and confidence. You'll love them. And now for the price of two or three pills, you can get 50 or more for around $100. You'll save hundreds of dollars off retail prices. That's enough to buy your date a nice dinner. Don't pay expensive prices for Viagra. Call now. Order 50 or more of our blue pills and pay as little as $2 a pill and save hundreds of dollars. Call anytime for confidential shipping.
Call Steel Man Pills now.
800-475-8167. 800-475-8167. 800-475-8167. That's 800-475-8167.
Catch Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown with Charlie and Debbie here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hi, it's PRN's Brad Gilley. Did you know you could take PRN with you anywhere? That's right. By downloading the PRN mobile app, you can listen to our live race broadcast from anywhere. Make sure you don't miss a second of the action from the track. Download today for station listings and on-demand access to your favorite studio shows like Fast Talk, The Pit Reporters, or Garage Pass. Get all the latest racing information at your fingertips with the PRN mobile app. Available in the Apple App Store and on Google Play.
Hey, I'm Corley Joy for Speedway Children's Charities. The mission for Speedway Children's Charities has remained true since its founding almost 40 years ago, to care for children in educational, financial, social, and medical needs in order to help them lead happy and productive lives. So many children have benefited from our group in the past, but we need your help now more than ever. There's so much we can do when we all join together, so let's start today. Visit SpeedwayCharities.org to learn more. I thank you in advance for your help.
Brett McMillan returns with more of the Pit Reporters here on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back. Adam Alexander from the CW is here, and Doug Turnbull from PRN and Five to Go Podcast is here as well. All right, week off for the Cup Series. I'd say one of the guys off the top of my head you thought would need the off week would be Ty Gibbs, but they seem to have gotten things turned around, Adam.
You know what's remarkable about that? Is just how quickly they've gotten themselves back in the game when it comes to the points.
Yeah.
Because, never, ever could you say in the month of March, this guy's in a must-win situation. But I got to tell you, looking at where he was a couple of weeks ago, it's like they are in big trouble. And they have flipped the switch, had a top 15, and then they come back with a top 10 first of the year last week. And then they were as competitive as anybody, minus Kyle Larson in that race on Sunday. And that's great. And it will be interesting to see what the off weekend does and then a wild card track in Talladega. Because if anybody wanted to keep racing, it was probably Ty Gibbs in that 54 team because of the momentum they had. Now you get a break, then you go to a wild card track. They really didn't need to break up the mo that they had going.
Yeah, they're all of a sudden 20th in points and just, 27 points out of 16th.
Right.
Which is amazing.
It really is amazing.
I mean, that team just all of a sudden, Doug, has just sprung to life.
Well, and look, it's only two races, but 2 weeks ago they were 30-something the points, had zero stage points. They now have 17 stage points. They still have Lenny Labs, but those back-to-back solid finishes there, that's really – I was just thinking going into the break, who were we going to talk about? Ty Gibbs is probably the only driver in the Cup Series – as religiously pointed as he is, who wants to be racing on Easter, okay? Because I think somebody else can take the week off.
Brad Keselowski is still an enigma. They just have not been able to get things going this year.
Especially when you consider, Buescher's been pretty consistent. Yep. But Ryan Preece is off to as good a start as he's had in his career. And the one thing that you could say about everybody when you look at their performance this year, good or bad, but when you celebrate the good, what makes you feel good about it, even better about it than what the numbers indicate, are just all the different types of tracks we've been to. We've checked all the boxes, intermediate, worn out intermediate, short track, road course, super speedway, all the stuff we've done. So if you can say right now, 9 races in, we've been consistent, you really need to celebrate that. And I feel like Buescher and Priest have been that. And Brad Keselowski has just struggled to find it. At Darlington, they were doing some great things and had the issue and the caution comes out and it just across the board. I mean, it fell off quickly. So they've shown some signs of turning it around, but that one has been a head scratcher for sure.
Can you figure that out, Doug?
Absolutely. Let me take over the 16 right now. No, it is really hard to figure out. Although I wonder if maybe there's some phantom speed built into some of these situations and that really RFK Racing as a whole is off more than they were in the past year or two. That could be it. And just Brad Keselowski is at the wrong end of the stick on it, but he's 31st in points. He was right back there where Ty Gibbs was right, just a little while back, but he hasn't come to life yet at all. And it really is confusing, but it seems like it's one thing after the other. And they're kind of almost out of mulligans, because you could win a race from anywhere in the points, but any of that goodwill that they would need to fall back on for a bad race in the summer seems to be a very little bit of that left. And they did make the crew chief change this year to have it Jimmy Bullens on top of that pit box. And so far, although some of the other crew chief changes like Denny Hamlin and Chris Gayle have worked out, even Ty Gibbs' deal is starting to work out there with Tyler Allen, the Brad Keselowski one, at least by the stat sheet, is not.
One of the other guys that has me baffled is Shane Van Gisbergen. He's a guy that last year everybody used to talk about that, obviously the oval tracks are new to him. He's been a road course expert, and that's what he's been doing down under. But we kept hearing how he picks up this pretty fast, and that's what we kept hearing last year, time after time after time. But whether it's bad luck or we're just not seeing that improvement this year that I expected to be seen on the oval track so far. Would you agree with that, or is there more bad luck there than I'm realizing?
My analogy there is when you stay out on old tires, and if you get the lead and you've got the track position in the clean air, you can make it work. But the minute you get shuffled, you just drop anchor, right? And I feel like they've been compromised a little bit. He's in the shuffle now, and he just can't find the traction to get going forward again. And I listened to Jesse Love describe his Cup debut, and it was so interesting because he was very, very humble in his approach and his recap of what happened. But he just talked about it's every lap. There is no taking time off. And the difference between Saturday and Sunday is enormous. And the depth of competition, and I feel like it's as good this year as it's ever been. And that's what Shane Van Gisbergen is dealing with. And the question becomes, does your confidence get knocked so much now that when you get to Mexico City and you get to Sonoma and you get to Watkins Glen and in Chicago, do you have enough left in you to go out and win and put yourself in the playoffs?
What are you seeing, Doug?
That's a great point. One difference I'll say, and all of those are very valid, is Shane Van Gisbergen is a champion who's in his mid-30s. So although any driver of any age can have their confidence shaken, I think Shane Van Gisbergen is confident in his ability more so than Jesse Love, who's 20 or 21 years old, would be if it was the exact same result. I do have to say, though, Shane Van Gisbergen did very little on any track in the Xfinity series outside of a road course that made me think, oh my gosh, he has to be in a cup car. But you take his road racing acumen and the fact that he won, I think it was 3 races last year, plus what he did at the Chicago Street Race, plus his background in V8 supercars, you're not going to keep that guy in Xfinity for 2 years unless he's absolutely awful. Well, he was just mediocre. Now he goes to the Cup Series and he doesn't catch 2022 Trackhouse. He's got 2025 Trackhouse, which is very visibly a step behind. Shane Van Gisbergen took the green flag, I think, in third to last place at Bristol. He was on my section of pit road, and he was in last place by the end of lap one and was running almost in last place when he got crashed or when he crashed. And then it was many laps down after that in the garage, I think, two or three different times. But Daniel Suarez wasn't but about two or three positions ahead of him. And Ross Chastain, difference in how long somebody's been in Cup, Ross Chastain took his car and drove right up to mid-pack. So there's a difference in drivers for sure, but overall, Trackhouse isn't putting a product on track that could give him a little speed to make up for that lack of experience, and he's just swatting flies in the middle of traffic there. Also, he has 3 DNFs, too. That doesn't help.
No, not at all. And finally, let me look at a guy, more of a positive note. Bubba Wallace, off to a great start this year, cooled off maybe a little bit the last couple of weeks, still top 10 in points. You're sitting there 8th in points, and I think still – probably the best start he's had to a season.
Something that Doug referenced earlier, and this is a huge part of success or lack thereof, scoring stage points. Bubba's qualified pretty well at times. They put themselves in position to do it. And, you know, Doug documented the stage points that Ty Gibbs has collected the last few weeks. That's how you go from 30th in points to 20th and put yourself just, you know, less than 30 below the cut line, is you score points in stage one and stage two, which does a couple of things. It either puts on steroids a good day, or it allows you to overcome a day when things don't go so well. And that's something to me that Bubba Wallace has done a good job of this year, keeping himself in the game early where you can collect those stage points. So even on a day when things don't go your way, you leave and you feel like you've accomplished something.
Doug?
At Bubba Wallace, I still don't see him as a driver that takes a mediocre car and puts it on his back. But he's taking cars and finishing, or at least running where he's about supposed to be running, if that's even the right grammar, okay? Where he's approximately supposed to be running, okay? And here he is 8th in points, but he only has 98 laps led. Look, the driver behind him in the standings, Joey Logano's led 260 laps, just as a comparison right there. So he still could do more, whereas Tyler Reddick is viewed as someone who is at the top of his generation and puts a car on his back, and there they are. Tyler Reddick's right ahead of him in the standings only by a few markers. So I'm very impressed with him, and this has been well documented by many more people before me, but it seems to have changed with Bubba Wallace here in his, I think this is his 8th full-time year in Cup, between the ears. He's a lot more mature, and he's not melting down when the race car isn't doing what it's supposed to or when another driver has not treated him how he's supposed to.
Yep. Fatherhood will do that, right?
he's matured greatly.
Yeah,
and his approach is outstanding, and I would say you credit two guys. One, Tyler Reddick, tremendous teammate who's had great success. It doesn't hurt to have Michael Jordan as an influence, too. He knows a thing or two about success.
Yeah.
Here's the key to the change, guys, is they replaced Booty Barker with Charles DeNike on the 23 pit box. I'm not about to say something profound here, don't worry. But the last four letters of DeNike's name are Nike. I mean, we got Air Jordan, we got Nike, we're finally together.
Hey, I will say, though, Booty Barker's great, and his record speaks for itself. But Charles DeNike, when you look at his history, his approach, that's another great reason to look at for that team being where it is right now. He's done an outstanding job.
I wonder if he got the job because his last name ends with Nike.
That's it.
White flag laps ahead. Stay with us.
This is Kyle Petty for Echo Park Automotive. As you might imagine, I know a thing or two about cars, and I'm here to tell you about a whole new way to buy a car, truck, or SUV. Did you know that Echo Park Automotive has over 95,000 five-star reviews? On top of that, every car that Echo Park Automotive sells goes through a 190-point inspection to make sure that it looks and drives like new, so you leave happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
We work hard to keep our cars looking great on the outside, but engine components need our attention too. That's where you can trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant to disperse carbon buildup in your engine and fuel system to keep your car or truck running at its peak. By soaking into the metal of your engine, Z-Max Micro Lubricant improves performance, extends engine life, and reduces emissions. Trust the many customers who've said, "Thanks for saving my engine." Find out more at zmax.com or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Mark Garrow is your host for Garage Pass here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Dale Earnhardt, he's almost been deified. There's a mystique about him that's never been attached to any other driver, including your dad.
I think there's two things for Dale Earnhardt that make him who he is. He was that guy that's your neighbor. I don't care if you live in a mobile home. I don't care if you live in a mansion. He's that guy that was your neighbor. He's the guy that was out in his yard planting his plants. He's the guy that was out there mowing. He's the guy that was out there doing it. He's the guy that drove the truck. He's the guy that got up under the car and changed the gear. He's the guy that put on a uniform and jumped in that car and became your hero on a Sunday afternoon. And you could identify with that. He's really that last guy. And he is, in the words of Tom Wolfe, last great American hero, the book that was written about Junior Johnson. He is that last guy to a lot of people. And he was going to have that following no matter what. It moved to a different level because of what happened at Daytona. Billy Joel, only the good die young. And that's the way you remember it. So I think that moves you to a different place too.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
And it's time now for our white flag laps. And first up from PRN and the Five to Go podcast, it's Doug Turnbull.
Hey, thank you, Brett. First, an honor to be on this show. I definitely listen a lot and known you a long time. And, of course, have watched and listened to Adam for a long time. We talk so much about Cup and Xfinity drivers. We go stats and this person needs to stay or go. The Truck Series race, which we've just started to get to do these with our PRN crew as part of that NASCAR Racing Network. I got to walk around pit road and I saw Andrés Pérez, but I saw his mom, his dad, and his younger sister. And I walked up to him, assuming that's who they were. And I asked them, do you live in the States? Did you move here with him or do you still live in Mexico? And they said they still live in or near Mexico City and they can only come to a few of his races. And it made me think about the stories that Daniel Suarez has told about leaving his home country and living in random places and learning the language and how tough it must be, not only for Andrés Pérez to live here in the States and chase his racing dream, but for his family to be apart from him. And I thought it was really heartwarming to see him there at Bristol and have a decent run at it too.
Yeah, well said. Next up from the CW, it's Adam Alexander.
You know, you talk about Perez, you talk about Suarez, and these are folks that have not forgotten where they came from, which takes me to the point I would like to make and where we've been recently in NASCAR and where we're going to go the next couple of weeks. Martinsville, Darlington, Bristol. This weekend, the return of Rockingham for the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series. And then we go to Talladega Super Speedway. There are some magical things on the schedule in NASCAR. Ben Kennedy and his group have done an unbelievable job adding Chicago, going to Mexico City and some of these new markets, new venues. But we can't forget about our roots and where we came from. And we are on a five-week run of going to some of the greatest places that just embody what NASCAR is all about. I love new. I love the big, the glitz, the glamour. But you also have to go back to your roots. NASCAR has never forgotten that, and I'm sure they never will.
Yeah, well said. I appreciate it. Well, I'm going to just kind of wrap things up with an interesting challenge that we have in the media sometimes, as we are the conduit between the drivers and the fans. And this past weekend was a reminder of how difficult to toe that line sometimes. Very personal story for a lot of us was the loss of Al Pierce and John Edwards, two people in the media center, very close to both us, to all of us, good friends to all of us. And yet the fans may not have known these people. So a very tough time to balance those two stories, people that we love, that we lost, but the fans may not have known. Talk to you next week.
Join us again next week for the Pit Reporters on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.